Next hour, Susan Messino joins me as we talk about the secrets of the universe. But when we come back with Don Clark, we'll talk more about her work, The Forbidden Text, and your calls on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back. Don Clark with us. Her website is her name, linked up at coasttocoastam.com. Don, when you were putting together this work, The Forbidden Text, what's the one major message that you learned just by writing the book?
Oh, just by writing the book. I think that I learned that for people to really wake up and heal, we often have to experience the darkness to appreciate the light. So that's a chiaroscuro effect. I think that there's hope. That's the big message. There's hope, and we still can solve this, despite the fact that it might look really dim sometimes.
Now, these wormholes that you write about, where do they take you?
The wormholes that I write about in the Forbidden Text or the wormhole at the Peru Stargate?
I guess either way.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about the ones in the Forbidden Text. So in the Forbidden Text, the heroine, she basically is a warrior of the heart, and she's contrasted by the typical kind of warrior who uses violence to try to solve a problem or waterboarding or some other things that happen in dark sites. So she is able to travel through time and space, and early in my own work, I too practiced some of these shamanic healing arts. So I wrote based on my own personal experience. That's why I say pretty much everything in the story is born from firsthand experience, even though it's wrapped in fiction. So what she does is a little akin to what Russell Targ talks about with remote viewing. She is able to tap into this captured person's field and experience information and imagery from hotspots in his field, and ultimately to travel through time and gain information that's vital to solving some problems. But just like with any journey, you can't succumb to fear no matter what you do, because that's when all of your opportunities disappear.
We can't give away the ending of the book, of course, but were you happy with it?
Could you say that one more time?
We can't give away the ending of your book, but were you happy with it?
I'm really happy with the ending of the book. I think that it, because it's a trilogy, so there's more coming.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's very reflective of where we are today. And I do a lot of, every year I'll do some sort of a live call for the people who have the book, because they're always talking about how the book relates to their own life and how certain things in the book give them big aha moments. And the ending plays into that. I think the truth is that we have to have faith and continue to walk forward, knowing that there is an answer, even if we can't see it.
Now, you're also called a futurist. So what does that mean exactly?
Well, for a long time, I have had the capacity to be able to meditate and experience the future, if you will. And so I've done advisement with people in the tech sector and in the business sector, because I can tend to see out a few more years than people who are just trying to develop from this perspective forward. So a little bit like when I went to the Stargate and I felt like I was out 40 some odd years looking back at what had happened and at the varying potential future energy lines, we can do that with a corporation, or we can do that with technology, we can do that in terms of medical innovation. And through a meditative state, you can basically wormhole into future probabilities and then look backwards and see the implications and the places where you could do it better.
Let's go to the calls for you. Let's go to Michael in Virginia Beach, Virginia, to get us started. Hey, Michael, go ahead.
Thank you so much, George. And George, this is the interview of a lifetime.
Hmm.
Think about this. Think about this now. Don Clark has said on this program that her father captured the highest-ranking KGB agent in history. Also, she said this on the very day that Natalia Veselnitskaya, who was in that campaign meeting with Donald Trump Jr.,
mm-hmm.
on the very day that she was indicted for obstruction of justice in an unrelated case to that meeting with Donald Jr. on this very day. Here comes Don, and what else has she told us? She told us that they use the techniques which we've had described on this program by people like Russell Todd.
That's right.
Like Dr. Doom, Ed Baines. They have used these techniques to make unprecedented penetrations of the West by sleeper cell agents. Now, here's the question. We know that Ed Baines went to Ukraine and to Russia for a number of years. Was he fighting back? And when the daytime version of the most patriotic show in America, Coast to Coast, premieres, will Don Clark be a co-anchor in that show?
Well, it's always a nighttime show, but you'll be a regular guest.
I think you're so observant. It's such a pleasure to talk with you. And, you know, interestingly, my father was also the attaché to Khrushchev during his first visit to the U.S.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
God, he went way back, didn't he?
Oh, he did. He did. He actually joined the military when he was 16, and he joined on falsified birth certificate. He to be part of the action.
Wow.
So much
now, you said he died at 53, but what year did he pass away, Don?
1984.
So he was there during the Kennedy administration and everything.
He was during the Bay of Pigs. He was there when the CIA was absorbing the CIC. And he took great issue with some of the techniques that the CIA was using, like round rooming and things like that. He didn't feel that it was a gentlemanly way to interrogate people because it really could destroy the psyche.
Well, the Bay of Pigs was great diplomacy by both John F. Kennedy and Nikita Khrushchev. They both showed restraint. And I believe that Kennedy went to Khrushchev and says, you got to help me out here. My generals want me to bomb the heck out of you folks.
Mm-hmm.
And they worked it out and got it done. But those were fascinating times. Did he ever talk about the Kennedy assassination?
He did.
Did he tell you anything?
He told me it wasn't what it appeared to be.
Well, he was right about that.
Mm-hmm. There were some things that he was really reluctant to talk about. I remember I was probably 19 years old, and we were starting to write the books, and he had a friend of his who was also trying to publish, and I remember we were living in Houston at the time, and my father got a phone call from this friend who was in San Antonio, and he looked really worried about the friend, and he said, you know, I've got to leave. And by the time he got to San Antonio, his friend, who had tried to publish things that shouldn't have been published at that point, he'd been stripped naked and killed. He'd had electrical wire wrapped around his testicles and been electrocuted to death.
Jeez.
And this was the way to scare people into not publishing. And so many people, of course, also just disappeared. So my father told me about Russell Targ way back when, and before he died, and we wanted to originally write about Project Stargate, but it was still classified at the time. And so I thought it was quite amazing. You know, the universe works in incredible ways when, as an adult, many, many, many years later, I actually became friends with Russell Targ.
Exactly. And he even commented about this book.
Yes, he did. He loved the book. He did a nice interview with me about the book.
He
couldn't put it down. He started from the beginning and just read it straight through.
He's a good guy. Or somebody read it for him because he's somewhat blind, he said. But
he is, but he can read. He has big, big, thick glasses.
He used to ride a motorcycle without any vision until his wife told him to stop.
Yeah, he's an incredible soul. He's just he's such an explorer and such a pioneer. I really, really do value him. His big takeaway is that we're so much more than this, what does he call us, a sack of potatoes. You know, we're so much more than these physical bodies.
Yep.
And when we start to unlock our potential, oh my goodness, the things we're capable of. Wormholing into the future, seeing into the past, changing our DNA, we are capable of so much more than we could ever imagine.
What would your father have said about 9/11/2001?
Oh, he would have said, we knew.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We knew and didn't stop it, or we knew and didn't want to stop it?
Yes, both. The latter. We knew and didn't want to stop it, and or, you know, it's we knew and didn't want to stop it, and or did we have a role in it? I'm not sure what he would have said about that.
I don't think we had a role in it, but I do think there were people within government who knew something was happening and turned around and said, you know what, this opens up the gate for us to do everything we want to do.
Well, the same thing happened with
and the world has changed since then.
Mm-hmm. Pearl Harbor was the same. We knew.
Yep.
And we all, yes, the world has changed a lot since then. And so in the forbidden text, that's really what I tackle head on is terrorism and how we can fight that in a new way, how we can actually.
Yeah, but it makes you wonder who the terrorist is.
Yes, it does.
I mean, there's no question. Terrorism is out there. But who's the terrorist?
Mm-hmm.
You know, exactly. It could very well be the people we think are on our side. Who have their own motives.
That is the premise there with sleeper agents and the people who think they're on our side with different motives. Yes, exactly.
Let's go to Jody in New York. Welcome to the program, Jody. Go ahead, please.
Hi, good evening. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Don, I'm actually familiar with your work. I've actually worked with some of your codes. And I just wanted to ask you two related questions. The first is, what recommendations can you give to people to get in touch with their future selves? And if you have someone like myself who've had trauma in their lives when they're young, and I've spent many years trying to get over it and still haven't, is there any specific techniques that you would recommend to heal, you know, trauma that is holding you back?
Absolutely. Hi, Jody. It's really nice to connect with you. I don't know if we've ever talked on a coaching call, but thank you for calling in. In terms of getting in touch with your future self, I've just released a free book that you can download on my site where I share about the Stargate experience, and there's links and information in there that can get you started. So I would totally check that out. One of the easiest techniques that I could tell you about right now is that there are some progressive aging apps online, and this is not what we talk about in the book, but this is just something you could do right now. Progressive aging apps where you can upload a photo of yourself, these are free things, and it will age you up 20 years. And this can sometimes initially be difficult for people to look at, but what they've discovered in research is that if we can start to feel compassionate about our future selves, it starts to form a relationship, and we can we actually find that people are more proactive in terms of taking care of themselves and planning better. And
I'm already my future self, Don. I want to go back to my 20 years.
Well, I feel like I'm in my 30s. You know, that's the wonderful thing when we really start to do this evolutionary work and we let go of the trauma imprints in our DNA, we really do feel like we reverse age. And I think we can live well into 130, 150. But in answer to your question about trauma repair, definitely we can repair the trauma. So trauma impacts us, of course, in so many ways.
Sure does.
From the shamanic perspective, we could think about it like soul loss. You know, we have a fracturing. I call it core fracturing. And we lose the vital energy that gives us our willpower, and it helps us know what we came to do. And so there are processes that we can learn to help recover that. And also we have to learn how to overwrite the trauma imprints in our epigenetics. And I can give you the short version of that right now.
Yeah, go ahead.
So trauma imprints us in ways that are multi-generational. Emory University released a study that demonstrated this with mice, and this was just also reproven with humans at Tufts University, but the mouse study is really interesting. They took mice and they put the mice in a cage with cherry blossoms, and then they shocked the bottom of their feet. And the mice, of course, became afraid of the smell of cherry blossoms. But what was so shocking was that this fear of the smell of cherry blossoms was passed down through generations. So the great-grandchildren of these mice, even if there was cheese underneath those cherry blossoms,
they wouldn't go there.
They wouldn't go there. So think about that for us as humans. What if the opportunity and the money and the love that you're seeking out of life is hidden behind a cherry blossom trigger? You're not going to see it. You're going to run the other direction with your heart beating fast.
Interesting take. Is that what you call part of epigenetics?
Yes, that's an epigenetic marker. And Tufts just proved that children who were treated poorly, who were emotionally or physically abused, of course, they have epigenetic markers, but they proved that their children and their grandchildren can inherit the damaging imprints from that, even if they suffered no abuse themselves.
Interesting.
Now, the good news is that we can reverse those trauma imprints when we put ourselves in what scientists would call a rich and enriched environment. And so there's a number of ways to enrich that environment. Certainly we can change our circumstances. I'm working on some technology that takes it into immersion in VR, but we've also developed some other work that boosts our biophotonic output, which is our life force backup. So we can reverse it. And the first things I would say is, you know, surround yourself with people and experiences that are supportive for you. That's going to make a big difference. And then I would really look at recovering the aspects of yourself that were shattered during those traumatic experiences.
If you're able to reverse it, would you be able to still pass that on down to your heirs opposite way?
Absolutely. You can pass down the positive traits as well. So let's imagine you were in the gold rush and you struck gold. That lucky streak, that imprint, that belief that these amazing things are possible for you can be passed down as well. It all relates, George, to the amount of emotional intensity that accompanies the experience. So that's why, you know, the astronauts report the feeling of awe when they see the planet is so overpowering.
It's emotional for them.
Exactly. And they have these insights, and they suddenly have awarenesses that they didn't have before. We've seen this time and time again. So the experiences of awe, of intense gratitude, of love, all of these things can help rewrite our genes to the positive side.
That's an interesting field you're in. And in terms of being a futurist, how did you get involved in that?
Well, I think it, so after I had the second near-death experience, I think I kind of told you that I had a number of dreams where I would write down things that I learned.
You had a lot of them.
A lot. For years, I would fill up these notebooks at night. And sometimes I would be sitting in a classroom in these dreams, and they were lucid dreams. It was as if I was really there. And they would bring somebody in on a stretcher, and they would start to show me parts of the body and how the underlying morphogenetic field, which Rupert Sheldrake talks about, which is the underlying energetic template that informs our DNA and actually creates like a blueprint for our reality creation. I'm sure you're familiar with that here,
yep.
Right?
Yep.
Okay. So I was shown all this and markings on the blackboard. And at the same time, in terms of being a futurist, I was also taken into a library.
All right, hold on right there. Let's talk about that and wrap up with final phone calls in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Next hour, Susan Messino joins me as we talk about the secrets of the universe, including universal laws, past lives, ghost adventures, and more. Paranormal Night on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, Don Clark with us. Don, we were talking about you as a futurist, and let you finish up your story.
Oh, sure. Not sure exactly where we ended off, but the short version of being a futurist, when I spoke as a futurist for emerging technologies, for example, again, it's helping people get a perspective that's from 10 to 20 to 30 years out. Oh, I remember where I was. I used to also frequently go somewhere that looked like a library, and books would open up. And rather than having pages that you would turn in a book today, the books themselves would resonate light, and all you had to do was put your hands into the light itself, and all of the information would simply upload. And so a lot of my perspectives about the future come from these types of experiences, which I think for me are just part of how I experience life. The door to the other side never really closed after my near-death experience. And I've been very driven by service ever since I was 12. And so I think that the futuristic perspectives that I have are critical to realizing what's important today and how to help people make the changes that they need to today. And I tend to, as private clients, I tend to work with people who are CEOs or big influencers. And when we can both help those people evolve and shift what's going on in their DNA and in their mindset of what's possible, and at the same time, we can offer tools to people at large, we really have a wonderful possibility of steering humanity forward in a positive way.
Give us your version of the future 10 years from now.
Oh, 10 years from now. Well, we're going to have at least 6 billion more people with smartphones in their hands. I would say within 5 years, based on where tech is going. 10 years from now, I believe that we will have people more than you can imagine working with artificial intelligence interfaces. So that means that they'll be augmented, like we would think from a sci-fi perspective, like cyborgs. You know, we'll have our own chips and our own special interfaces that are tech that's merged with our physical body so that we ourselves are enhanced as human beings. I think with artificial intelligence and self-driving cars and things like that, we definitely have some challenges, and there are multiple future probabilities that I see there, some of which aren't so great.
I am not a booster of self-driving cars, nor am I a booster of self-driving trucks.
I agree, and they already have self-driving trucks going over in Europe.
That's crazy. First of all, I don't want them displacing our truck drivers. And secondly, it's dangerous.
I think it's dangerous, too.
We already had a self-driving car kill a woman in Arizona.
Ran her right down. Somebody said to me, wouldn't it be great to just have self-driving Lyft pick you up and drive you around? I thought, no, not at all. As fallible as humans are, I think we still have this capacity for intuition that I think an AI is going to lack. We have the ability to break the rules sometimes when it's necessary. It worries me.
Well, let's go.
It's going to come.
Let's go to the phones here for you. Let's go to John in Virginia Beach, Virginia. Hi, John. Go ahead.
Hi, George. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure thing, sir.
I wish you both a happy new year.
Thank you.
Happy new year to you.
Yeah, I tell you, several years ago when I was in college, I had a serious back operation. They had to put rods and screws in my back, and it took several hours for the surgery. And when they took me back to intensive care, I was in a lot of pain, and I felt just bad all over. I mean, just terrible. And in my room, they had me hooked up to monitors and so forth. And the next morning, before sunlight, I reached over and lit a cigarette. And as I did, I looked at the end of my bed, and it was the most beautiful woman I've ever seen in my life. She wasn't made-up beauty. She was just natural beauty. She was all in white, and she had a glow or something around her. But I wasn't dreaming. I was wide awake because I had smoked a cigarette. But anyway, I asked her, I said, "Who are you?" And she just looked at me and smiled. And I said, "Who are you?" And she smiled once more, beautiful smile. So at that point, I started to get out of the bed. And she put her hand up like, "Stop." And I didn't know what was going on. So I reached over and turned my light on. And when I did, she was completely gone. And about that time, two nurses come running into my room. And they asked me, "Mr. Randall, are you all right?" I said, "Yes, I feel fine. I feel very good." And they said, "Well, all of your monitors flatlined. And there was nothing wrong with the monitor, but we come rushing in here to see if you're okay." I said, "Yeah, I'm fine." And I think that was a near-death experience. I'm not sure, but it certainly felt like one. And what do you think?
Yes, I would agree with you. That definitely sounds like a near-death experience to me. And when you saw her, I'm sure she just seemed so real to you, didn't she?
Yeah. She was, I mean, she was there, no question about it. And like I say, she was beautiful. And
how did she make you feel?
Go ahead, John.
How did she make you feel, John?
Well, thanks a lot.
Okay, thank you.
Supported?
Nothing. He's gone now.
Okay.
Well, there's an interesting take on that, though.
Mm-hmm. Well, when I was recovering from the surgery, I remember they'd come by every 4 hours and give the morphine shots to me in my legs. And I remember at one point seeing my great aunt. Her name was Tanta Lucie, and she was Swiss. She appeared right by my bedside in her. She had this long black dress on and her hair up in a bun, and she told me everything was going to be all right. She said, remember the covenant, the promise of the covenant. I had no idea what that meant. And she held my hand, and when she touched my hand, all of the pain went away. And when I woke up after the next round of morphine, I asked my mother, I said, where is Tanta Lucie? Where is she? I saw her. And she looked at me, and she said, oh, she died today.
Oh.
So it's the same type of thing. When we start to leave our body, these other realms become so much more accessible to us. And I think one of the biggest challenges for me has been, how do we take this information, which there's so many things that I can see on the other side, how do we ground it in to the physical reality and make it usable for people to better their lives today?
Next up, Giovanni's in Los Angeles. Hey, G, go ahead.
How's it going, George?
Okay.
Happy New Year's.
You too, sir.
I love the show. Love you guys so much. Dom, your work, absolutely essential, and I'm so glad that you're pioneering your own path, but all the while maintaining your father's legacy. That's just absolutely wonderful. I just wanted to share a little experience I had. I've always been incredibly intuitive, and I'm borderline, you know, I suppose, being able to tell what's coming up next or what's coming along, coming my way. On one day, not a special day in particular, but one day I suppose I was taking a nap. I've been a security guard for about 12 years, and now I do truck driving, so I'm always listening to the show, and I'm always in strange places and sleeping strange hours. I take a nap, and I have this dream, but this dream is so lucid. I even doubt whether it's a dream or not. And I have this dream I imagine it to myself, but there's an old man laying in a bed, and he's got a good long white beard, bald, got some hair on the sides, he has the king's crown going on, and I get this feeling that this person laying in the bed, I know this person, and all of a sudden I see this young man come into this room, and he comes over to the old man, and he starts saying, you know, Daddy, I don't want you to leave, you know, please don't leave us, it's not time yet. And then the old man grabs the young man's hand, and then he says, it's okay, it's my time, you know, I spent enough time here. And then I'm overwhelmed with this feeling of just longing and sadness, but at the same time, just it's time. And I wake up, and when I wake up, I come to the conclusion that that old man is me. And so I sit and I think, could this be the future of me? Did I have a glimpse into my future self?
Well, and we have to remember, if we look at future probability lines, you have multiple future probabilities. And so if you are connecting with a future probability, a future version of yourself, and if part of you is longing for more time, I would encourage you to see if you can go back to visit that person or journal write about your experience and see what you could do differently today to have more time, if that's what you were longing for. Obviously with a child or a younger version of yourself.
Would you like to see the older version of yourself, Dawn?
Me? I do it frequently.
What the future of you could be?
Absolutely.
Would you change to anything?
I do change things all the time. So if we think that we have multiple future probabilities, most of them fall within this zone of most likely to occur based on our epigenetics, based on what we believe is possible for ourselves. And that's a very narrow cone. And then outside of that kind of is our wishful thinking zone. And then beyond that are what we would call wild card future probabilities. And so whatever I see, I'm always questioning, how could I serve more? How could I make a bigger difference? What could I do to be healthier, to live longer, to help more people? And then I'll reverse engineer those answers, and we change the trajectory of our future quite actively when we do that.
Let's go to Kirk in Medford, Oregon. Hey, Kirk, welcome to the show.
Greetings, George. Thank you so much for taking my call.
You're very welcome.
Don't go too far out there, George, because I might be speaking with Dexter Monterey. So
the future me.
The future you, yeah. And this is a great program. Not since the days of Malachi Martin have I heard such a program that I think will go down as legendary. George, when I was a young kid, I was always sick. I was, between the ages of 8 and 12, always had fevers, ear infections.
Mm.
And one morning I woke up. It was not even light out. It was a little dark inside the house. But the floor lit up in front of me, and I was wide awake. I stood up in bed. I saw like a ring of orange fire glow from the floor, and then all of a sudden I was thrust into a world where I actually was able to glimpse the future of things that would come upon the earth. I saw things that scared me so bad to this very day that I've never actually been the same. I saw the fires, I saw the hurricanes, the breakdown of society.
Jeez.
And I saw much worse, the fires that are yet to come that are going to be a lot worse, unfortunately, than the ones we've had already. But what scared me the most was going into this world where it was Earth, but the people were not, they lacked emotion, they lacked empathy. But there was a great structured system in place, but it seemed like people were very unhappy,
mm-hmm.
and it upset me so much. And then I put it together recently, and I realized that I think it has to do with artificial intelligence, and that's a big warning to mankind. That the dark future that I saw, I think it could be averted. But I was told in my dream that it depended on the covenant that we make with certain forces if this world will come into that direction or another world through a spirit way of doing things that would also be a beautiful world would come into existence. But it depended on what road we took. And I never thought much of it until I recently started putting all this together, and it's starting to make a lot of sense to me now. And I don't like that dark world I saw in my dream. It people were just, I think the ancients had a point when they said something was coming down in our world that would eventually destroy us. And I think that energy that they saw, I think it's dark energy. I think it's getting into people, and the world I saw was very advanced, but I don't know how to say it any other way, but very evil, too.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you could be right about that.
Yeah, and it disturbed me immensely to this very day. I pray every day, and I bless people, but that world may be coming soon.
Would you say, Don, that your book, The Forbidden Text, and thank you, Kurt, we're almost out of time, is like a wake-up call?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it touches on exactly this. We have to hang on to our humanity. And certainly if we become so enamored with our cell phones and our computers, statistically, we have proven that one of the reasons people can become so polarized and so mean to each other on Facebook is because we're not reading any facial cues anymore. We don't realize that those people that we're being mean to are... They have feelings
and emotions. Don, thanks for being on the program. Up next, The Secrets of the Universe.